Case of the day, the United States v. Otero. Reschner?
Yes, may it please the court. My name is Daniel D. Reschner, Jr., and I represent defendant William Otero, and the appeal is 053132. You have another case that at least been enjoined for purposes of indictment. We have one issue which remains unresolved. That's relative to the issuance of a search warrant. If I were going to topic the argument, I'd say deus ex machina, hearkening back to ancient playwrights. Whenever they'd hit a point where they just couldn't resolve that plot, literally on a machine, they bring in a god to save the day. Well, if we take a look at the affidavit in this particular case, which is reproduced in the government appendix, I believe appendix pages 71 and 72, we see three paragraphs which are important to the consideration of this particular issue. Now, what is the search warrant for? The search warrant for is for an apartment which is shared by my client and his girlfriend. It's in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Okay? Now, the government is working with one informant. This is a person, actually, it turns out someone they're buying drugs from, and after the second buy, he real quickly turns into an informant. He'll be the co-appellant. In any case, you have an agent who's trying to arrange for a deal of drugs right in Wisconsin. Will you come and see me in Wisconsin? No, I can't come and see you. I had an earlier incident. I cannot travel to Wisconsin. As a matter of fact, I think those are his direct words as recounted in the affidavit. Later on, that deal goes down right in Gurnee, Illinois. Second transaction. Officer tries to arrange it. Well, can you come down here? Again, recounted in our affidavit. No, I can't go to Kenosha. I don't do that. We'll have to do that in Illinois. Suddenly, we have the second transaction takes place at Gurnee. The person's arrested. All of a sudden, miraculously, this place that the officers must have wanted to go through ab initio, they finally find the grounds for it. This person that told them, well, I can't go to Wisconsin, I would never go to Wisconsin, says, well, you know, I got the drugs for this particular deal. Just before I came down here, I got them from Wisconsin. Well, okay, it's fresh information, I'll admit that. It's an admit statement against personal interest. But it's gone against everything else that the agent has recounted that this person said.
But assume there was no probable cause, and now we're looking at Leon exceptions. The officer revealed the inconsistency in Wood's statement in the affidavit. Isn't the officer then entitled to rely on the magistrate's conclusion that Wood's statement and Cabrera's statement that Otero was present at the first sale enough? I mean, why is it entirely unreasonable for an officer to rely on a magistrate's judgment?
Because he knew that the affidavit was prepared in a reckless fashion. He knew that the information that he gave to that magistrate was not vetted as it should have been, especially when concerns were raised earlier as to why this person wouldn't go into Wisconsin. For example, you might say to the person, as they are arrested and on the parking lot in Gurnee, Illinois, oh, gee, why did you finally decide to go to Wisconsin? There are many ways he could have resolved that particular problem, more of which I'll go into in my rebuttal time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Epstein?
May it please this court, Judge Flom, Judge Bauer, Judge Kovner. I will have, in all candor, when this document came across my desk and I saw that one of the issues was venue, I looked down my nose upon it. It seemed to be kind of a non-issue. But at some point, unknown to me, in the library, Patrick Henry stepped forth and he said, "This privilege prostrates this paper." I knew that I was missing something, and I went deep into the history of venue. And in fact, as a side note and background of venue, the American Revolution was ultimately fought for this issue of venue. The British wished to
maybe
try...
Maybe an oversimplification. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Mr. Epstein, where did Woods live at the time of these events? Did he live in Wisconsin?
He did live in Wisconsin, yes, Judge.
So will the record tell us if Agent Carlton knew where Woods lived at the time Carlton wrote the affidavit?
He may have, it may not have. We know that all the drug transactions occurred in Illinois. And this, of course, goes to the issue of, did the jury consider this? The U.S. attorney at trial accepted and agreed that this was an issue. And they submitted it to the jury in form of a jury instruction. So whether there are facts to dispute here was a settled issue. And 95% of the cases, venue can be some kind of a side issue. But in those cases that it is not, we cannot slight it. And I cite Apprendi. And not for the fact that this is somehow a sentencing factor. In the greatest of senses, it is, because it's an element. And if you find him not guilty of that element, then he walks free.
Look, you know, your argument that venue has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt has been repeatedly rejected.
In all due respect, Judge, I don't know that I've seen it addressed in this fashion, or addressed and given great reasons. There was, in United States versus Mayo, it was brought up and it's slighted. They don't say why it should or should not be of a particular standard. I can say Illinois and Wisconsin, at the time of the research that I did, hold venue beyond a reasonable doubt. So the state courts, many state courts, still follow this issue. In fact, there is a Seventh Circuit case that says venue is to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, Canino, United States versus Canino, says, no, that's not what they said. I would ask your honors to go back and look at this case. It is what they said. And Canino cites United States versus Mayo for their support. Mayo says nothing about it. Why do we do this? I believe that the jury trial and the vicinage really is what we're talking about, and that is where the jury is drawn from, the jury of your peers. A jury trial cannot be separated from this issue of venue. Why? If we have a longshoreman, like we heard earlier, tried in Manhattan or in Montana, those individuals cannot relate. If we had a Texan taken out of his locus and tried in New York, his draw, his use of metaphors, he may appear to those jurors to be stupid, when he is not. The right of vicinage, have your jurors drawn from the area of your locus, goes to having a jury that can understand who you are. They are your neighbors, so to speak. To the extent that the courts have change their opinion, I believe that they're wrong. That should not be the law. I don't believe you can separate a jury trial. The right of a jury trial includes vicinage. And oddly enough, I saw Apprendi and said, oh, it's just another Apprendi toss. But if you look at Apprendi, it states specifically a jury trial of the vicinage. They state and cite those old cases and use that language. So I was surprised myself when I changed my own opinion and thought I was wrong. This, in fact, is a good issue and should be changed. Judge, there is another issue, and I will springboard off of counsel's. And oddly enough, if counsel's warrant is effective, then Mr. Woods should have been given acceptance of responsibility, because Mr. Woods is the source of that affidavit for that warrant. The U.S. attorney, in their brief to you, says that the information was timely. It was given the same day of the arrest. Well, who gave that? Mr. Woods did. Acceptance of responsibility that day, he provided information for the United States government to obtain a warrant.
But then he started with the lies.
Judge, I believe he may have wavered a bit. If he told an untruth, I mean, does that belie the fact that he was the backbone for the search? This whole case came down because Mr. Woods, otherwise they would have had just Mr. Woods. Mr. Woods immediately said, well, there's also Otero Cabrera, this is where I got the drugs, this is where the apartment is. He immediately started agreeing. He did go to trial. At trial, he didn't say, I didn't do anything here. His counsel immediately said, we're guilty. But we're just not guilty of everything they're saying that we're guilty of.
So he just denied, Mr. Epstein, being in the drug conspiracy. That's the only thing?
Exactly, Judge. He said that we would be guilty of possession of drugs. We weren't in this game enough to be guilty of the conspiracy. when Mr. Woods, I believe it was at sentencing, he said, I didn't testify because, guess what, by the way, Your Honors, Mr. Cabrera, the main drug dealer, the gentleman that lives in our neighborhood here in Chicago, he's still walking free. He was the big guy. Otero was the second in command. Woods was last. Woods would not testify against Cabrera because he didn't. He was in fear.
I understand his, in theory, your argument on acceptance and responsibility, but obviously the district judge, despite the denial of participation as a co-conspirator, just felt otherwise.
Judge, I believe, in all due respect to him, I believe he was wrong. I believe he abused his discretion. He should have found otherwise. I see my I'm going into my rebuttal time. I would like to preserve that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Koenig.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I was co-counsel in both trials below, and I appear on behalf of the United States this morning. I'd like to begin with the question of whether Special Agent Carlton's affidavit established probable cause to believe that evidence of drug trafficking would be found in Mr. Otero's apartment.
But I would ask you to address the lack of meaningful corroboration.
Your Honor, I think there was some corroboration. I want to be careful not to overstate my argument. I think Magistrate Judge Callahan got it just right when he said the evidence here was not overwhelming, but it was sufficient to establish probable cause. And in addition to the statements of Woods, which were based on firsthand observation and were somewhat detailed, there was also the statement of Mr. Cabrera, who said, set forth in the affidavit, that he and Otero had been present for the earlier undercover deal on November 16th. So that doesn't necessarily tie that residence to a conspiracy, but it definitely ties Mr. Otero to the drug conspiracy. So I would say there is some corroboration here, Your Honor.
Did the officer even check to see if Otero lived at that address?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Right. Did he check Otero's criminal record?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right.
And Your Honor raises a good point. And I think that's about the worst that can be said of the agent's conduct, is that he didn't do more. That certainly isn't bad faith. And I'll get to that in a minute. But I do just want to hit some of the main points with respect to what Woods told the agent and what was set forth in the affidavit. He gave a specific address in Kenosha, described where the drugs would likely be found in the detached garage and the bedroom, and he stated that he had seen a scale and additional quantities of drugs. And these observations were all coming from somebody who knew something, presumably, about drug dealing, because he had just shown up for a second undercover buy. They weren't super detailed. You know, he didn't say you'll find the drugs next to a Sony color TV in the northwest corner of the bedroom or anything, but they were somewhat detailed, and I think more so than the cases relied upon by my opponent, which were more general, as sort of a former girlfriend saying, yeah, you'll find drugs in my boyfriend's place. The information was very timely and fresh. Now, I should say parenthetically, as you're obviously aware from your question, Judge Rodner, the information turned out to be a lie. The cocaine for the November 19th transaction had come from Cabrera in Chicago and not Otero's apartment in Kenosha. But the officers, of course, did not know that at the time. And that gets us into the Leon exception for good faith. Mr. Otero makes this argument about an inconsistency in the affidavit, which he says goes to both probable cause and good faith, or the lack of it. On the one hand, Woods is saying he won't go to Kenosha because there's an outstanding warrant for his arrest based on events on November 16th. On the other hand, he's saying, I just got the drugs there this morning, the morning of the 19th. I would submit to you that those statements are not necessarily inconsistent. Picking up drugs from a known co-conspirator, someone you've been doing business with for a while, is not the same as doing a drug deal in a public place with someone that you barely know. To give another example, I might tell a friend of mine in Chicago, I won't come down to visit you for coffee during rush hour during the week because I can't deal with the traffic on the freeway. That doesn't mean if I also tell that friend, I went down to the Seventh Circuit to argue a case last week during rush hour, that there's necessarily an inconsistency there. There are two different purposes behind going to another place.
I need to ask you a factual question. In footnote 6 of the red brief, it states that the offense at issue is classified as an adult conviction in Wisconsin. I wondered what the authority for that assertion is. I mean, is there a statute or some case law that characterizes it as an adult conviction?
There may be, Your Honor. I was relying principally on the classification in the pre-sentence report.
Uh-huh.
That since the conviction is listed under adult convictions, I'm afraid that's as much detail as I can provide. But, of course, you can be tried as an adult or convicted as an adult, even if you're not necessarily 18.
He was 17, as I recall.
Yes, Your Honor. So just wrapping up on the probable cause issue, I would say that the agent obtained and relied upon the warrant in good faith, so that even if this court should find for some reason that probable cause was lacking, it should affirm the denial of the motion to suppress. Mr. Woods' appeal is somewhat of a many-headed hydra, and I think rather than plowing through all of the issues, I will just comment briefly on venue and then invite any questions that you may have for the government. I'm not a historian of venue, but it seems to me that the law of this circuit is very clear that it need only be established by preponderance of the evidence. That's in Canino and Sachs. I would note that there was no motion for a transfer of venue, and the venue issue was really argued only indirectly to the jury. Now, I'm not saying there's been a waiver here. I'm just saying it sort of goes to the equities. And it also goes to the harmless error analysis. There was plenty of evidence placing the conspiracy in both places, the northern part of Illinois and the southern part of Wisconsin. But in a broader sense, I think we reserve the beyond a reasonable doubt standard for facts that go to innocence or guilt. And that may not be stated explicitly in this court's case law on the subject, but I think that is the rationale for saying that venue, which doesn't go to innocence or guilt, may be established by a lower standard. And so I don't think the court should abandon its precedent in that area.
I have one last question for
yes,
you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Regarding Mr. Otero, actually, because you asked that we remand to enter a sentence of 240 months. But what I'm wondering is, on what authority do you would you ask us to direct a district court to enter a particular sentence here? I mean, shouldn't the district court calculate?
Now that you mention it, Your Honor, you're quite correct. A sentence of up to 240 months would have been a more accurate statement of the law, and that seems like a good way to conclude, Your Honors. We would ask you to affirm Mr. Woods' conviction and sentence and Mr. Otero's conviction and sentence in all respects except the one just mentioned.
All right,
so if there are no further questions, thank you.
While we're sending Mr. Otero's case back, let's send it back without that probable cause affidavit. I noticed some of the comments that were mentioned in Mr. Koenig's argument with you. And just to go back to that affidavit, when Mr. Woods is first talking with Agent Carlton, he indicated to the affiant that because of an incident in Kenosha the night before, he could not travel to Wisconsin. Next, 2 days later, when again Carlton is trying to arrange a deal in Wisconsin, specifically asking, can I get into Wisconsin? I attempted to arrange delivery of the cocaine in Kenosha County, to which Woods indicated that he could not deliver the drugs in Wisconsin. Sorry, the nexus is gone there. The government, in their brief, points out, well, there are some certain details that this informant had right after he was arrested that made us really, really believe in the truth of what he had to say. Well, he had the address of Mr. Otero. Well, now that we know the lie of what he had to say, we know that the address isn't in and of itself enough to support a warrant to go into anyone's house, having someone's address. Said, well, there's a scale and maybe an additional quantity of drugs on the property. Again, another Kreskin-like type of revelation on the part of Mr. Woods. If he's implicating someone as having supplied him drugs, I would highly imagine that a scale and additional quantity of drugs on the premises wouldn't be too much of a reach. Then, my favorite, the detached garage or bedroom is where the drugs could be, ladies and gentlemen. The trial testimony showed and the picture showed, Judge, the garage is not detached. In other words, all this agent had to do was just say, well, can you get two out of three right? It just isn't there. And for those very same reasons, I have to say that good faith is also not present. It's a rare, unusual circumstance. I can understand. He really, really, really wanted to get into that particular property for reasons which aren't in the affidavit. But, you know, that doesn't make it so. And just like the artificiality that you have in a deus ex machina, it's the same artificiality you got here, folks. And you can see through it. There's no probable cause. And sadly, there also is not good faith. Everything from that search should have been excluded. And with that, I'm all done unless you have any questions for me.
Okay. Guess not. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Epstein.
Your Honor, Judge Kovner, I was looking at my notes. You asked where Mr. Woods lived. I don't know that it's completely borne out. I know that the agent noted that there was a couch in Mr. Otero's apartment, which seemed to be slept in, and there were some clothes there. I don't know that it was ever ultimately determined. Your Honor, it raised a good question. And if there's ever a case as a poster child for Booker, this is it. We look at Mr. Woods' conduct when he was 17 years old, when his co-actor robbed somebody while they're in juvenile detention. They take a lamp, and now, some 15 years later, I'm guessing, now that's come back to haunt him as an adult action. Booker allows us to avoid looking at this and make him a career offender, when in fact he was not a career offender. He doesn't have a long string of violent felonies. He was a small-time drug dealer in this case. The lie that Your Honor mentioned, I may have... referring to the fact that Mr. Woods, I don't know that he was necessarily lying. He was a small fish. I compare him to the individual that you meet in a retail store. He doesn't own. He's not the manager of the store. He doesn't own the store. Cabrera owned the store. The manager was Otero, and Mr. Woods was the greeter at the door. He's the one that sold you a battery pack. He had a minor role. His lawyer should have raised it, and they did not. It cannot be for strategy that you would not raise that at sentencing, that he had a minor role, because everything said that. The government even called him just a worker in the case. Judge, there is no place, no other right that we've talked to that is mentioned twice in our Constitution.
But I read Judge Randa's sentencing, and he really didn't think Mr. Woods was a minor.
Judge, I believe that Judge Rand's analysis belies the facts and even the arguments by the government. The government says that he was a worker, and then... admittedly, Judge Rand looks at other factors and says that he's essential, but you can be essential but not be a major role. I see my time has expired. Thank you very much for allowing me.
Our thanks to all counsel. Mr. Escher and Mr. Epstein, I want to extend an additional thanks on behalf of the court for your accepting the appointment and ably representing the appellants.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Case is taken under advisement in the court.